This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Hello and welcome to another edition of The Economist. I am Maxine Clark. The world this week in politics. Bulgaria seemed to be heading toward another election, its sixth in 3 years, as the country's political parties fail to agree on a unity government, threatening Bulgaria's attempt to adopt the euro as its currency in early 2025. Far-right and pro-Russian parties are gaining ground. Simon Harris was chosen as a new leader of the Fine Gael in Ireland and is set to become the country's prime minister following the resignation of Leo Varadkar. Aged 37, Mr. Harris will be the youngest person to hold the position. Gunmen attacked a concert hall near Moscow, killing at least 139 people. It was Russia's deadliest terrorist incident since the Beslan school siege in 2004. An affiliate of Islamic State in Central Asia claimed responsibility. 4 of the alleged attackers appeared in court, severely bruised and beaten, to face charges of terrorism. The authorities say the men are from Tajikistan. The American embassy in Moscow had warned of an attack in early March, telling its citizens to avoid large gatherings. Russia ignored the warning. Vladimir Putin and Russia media have instead brazenly tried to link the attack to Ukraine. One television channel aired fake video clips of a Ukrainian official crowing over the incident. Russia intensified its drone and missile assaults on Ukraine, stepping them up shortly before the IS attack in Moscow. Kyiv, the capital, was hit and energy infrastructure targeted across the country. Poland scrambled fighter jets when a Russian missile strayed into its airspace. It's all about the symbolism. The UN Security Council passed a resolution demanding a temporary ceasefire between Israel and Hamas for the remainder of Ramadan, aided by the abstention of America, which has used its veto to block 3 earlier resolutions calling for a halt to the fighting in Gaza. Angered by America's abstention, Israel cancelled a planned visit by a delegation to Washington and said it would not halt operations while Hamas still holds Israeli hostages. Voters in Senegal turned out in large numbers to elect Bissirou Diomaye Faye, the opposition candidate, as president. Macky Sall, the outgoing president, had tried to postpone the election, causing a protracted constitutional crisis. A court in South Africa ruled that a party backed by Jacob Zuma, a former president, can be on the ballot in the general election scheduled for the end of May. The Umkhonto Beswazi party may get more than 10% of the vote, according to recent polls, which could push the ruling African National Congress to around 40%, forcing it to seek a coalition, if it wishes, to form a government. America, Britain, and New Zealand blamed China for a cyber espionage campaign aimed at a variety of targets, including Britain's Electoral Commission, New Zealand's Parliament, and critics of the Chinese Communist Party. America and Britain placed sanctions on an alleged front company for one group of Chinese hackers. They also placed sanctions on 2 alleged members of the group, while America brought criminal charges against them and 5 other men. The High Court in Britain gave Julian Assange more time to fight against his extradition to America to face espionage charges, ruling that the American government had to provide more assurances about the fairness of a trial there, among other things. Mr. Assange leaked a trove of classified information on his WikiLeaks site that the Americans say put lives in danger. The candidate of Venezuela's main opposition coalition was blocked from registering for July's presidential election and missed the deadline. Corina Yoris, an 80-year-old philosopher, had been drafted in at the last minute following the arrest of senior opposition figures. Maria Corina Machado won the opposition primary last year by a landslide, but was prohibited from running by the Supreme Court. America's State Department said it was tracking legal developments in India after the arrest of Arvind Kejriwal, the Chief Minister of Delhi and a senior opposition politician. Mr. Kejriwal's arrest comes just weeks before the start of a general election. He was taken into custody for questioning over a corruption case relating to Delhi's alcohol policy, which he says is fabricated. America and Japan are preparing to strengthen their military alliance, the details of which will be announced when Kishida Fumio, Japan's Prime Minister, visits the White House on April 10th. The plan includes a restructuring of the command chain that will smooth defense planning. Meanwhile, the Japanese cabinet sealed a deal to sell fighter jets that are being developed with Britain and Italy to other countries, further eroding Japan's pacifist stance. The lower house of Thailand's parliament voted overwhelmingly to legalize same-sex marriage and equalize rights on inheritance and so on. The bill is a priority for the government. If, as expected, the upper house and the king approve the law, it will come into force by the end of the year, making Thailand the first country in Southeast Asia to legalize gay nuptials. Joe Biden signed a $1.2 trillion package of spending measures into law after Republicans and Democrats yet again reached a last-minute deal to avoid a government shutdown. The legalization should have been passed 6 months ago. Rebellious Republicans in the House of Representatives yet again raise the possibility of ousting the Speaker. The Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore collapsed after a container ship collided with one of its support columns. Six workers who were on the bridge died after falling into the river below. The Port of Baltimore, a hub for trade on America's East Coast, will be disrupted for months. Even a cat has only 9 lives. An appeals court agreed to Donald Trump's request to pay just a portion of the $454 million penalty awarded against him in a civil fraud trial. The court told Mr. Trump he could post a bond of $175 million while he appeals against the original judgment. Mr. Trump's relief was short-lived, however. Soon after, a judge denied his plea to delay his criminal trial over hush money payments to a porn star. The trial starts on April 15th. Mr. Trump may be able to scrape some cash from the sale of stock in his social media company on the NASDAQ exchange. Truth Social's share price rose by 16% on its first day of trading, making Mr. Trump's stake worth around $4.6 billion. And moving on to the world this week in business. The top ranks of Boeing's management were overhauled amid investor unease about safety checks on its airliners. In January, a panel fell from a 737 MAX 9 passenger jet soon after takeoff. Several incidents have been reported since then, including a 777 that lost a landing gear tire when it was taking off. Boeing safety has become a meme on TikTok. Dave Calhoun is to step down as chief executive by the end of the year, and Larry Kellner departs as chairman. The head of the commercial aircraft division has been replaced with immediate effect. America's Justice Department lodged an antitrust lawsuit against Apple, accusing the tech giant of making it harder for customers to switch phones, undermining innovation in apps, and imposing extraordinary costs on developers, businesses, and consumers. The complaint, in effect, attempts to stop Apple locking users into its ecosystem. Apple said the suit threatens who we are as a company and sets a dangerous precedent, empowering government to take a heavy hand in designing people's technology. The case will take years to wind its way through the courts. Meanwhile, the European Union opened investigations into Alphabet and Apple over competition practices at their app stores, and Meta over its use of personal information in advertising. It is the first official scrutiny of tech companies under the EU's new Digital Markets Act. Had the issues been resolved with the companies by mere discussion, they would have been solved by now, said the EU's antitrust commissioner. Alibaba abandoned a planned IPO for its logistics division instead of offering to buy out minority shareholders in the business. A year ago, the Chinese tech giant announced its intention to split into six parts, with the potential for each to pursue a stock market listing. But the plan hasn't excited investors. Late last year, Alibaba decided not to spin off its cloud unit and suspended the IPO of its supermarket arm. Reddit's share price held on to most of the gains reaped from its successful flotation on the New York Stock Exchange. The social media platform's stock soared by 48% on the first day of trading. The yen fell to a 34-year low against the dollar, triggering warnings from Japanese officials that they might intervene in the currency markets. The Bank of Japan raised interest rates recently for the first time since 2007, which would normally cause the yen to strengthen. But its monetary policy remains comparatively loose. Trust up in debt. The director of the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office in Washington repeated his warning that America faced a looming crisis on its federal debt, which stood at $26 trillion, or 97% of GDP, at the end of 2023. Philip Swaggle raised the possibility that markets could lose confidence in America's ability to repay debt, similar to the situation that the government of Liz Truss faced in Britain in October 2022. Earlier this year, Mrs. Swaggle said that America had entered a slow spiral of rising debt and concurrent debt payments. Turkey's central bank surprised markets by lifting its main interest rate by 5 percentage points to 50%. The rate was 8.5% a year ago. With inflation nearing 70% on an annual basis, the bank said it would retain a tight monetary policy until a significant and sustained decline in price rises was observed. The British government is no longer the controlling shareholder in the NatWest Group, having reduced its stake to just below the 30% threshold that would define it as such. During the financial crisis of 2008, the government bailed out Royal Bank of Scotland to save it from collapse. In 2020, RBS was renamed NatWest Group, providing retail banking under the RBS and NatWest brands. 16 years after the crisis, the government still doesn't expect NatWest Group to be fully private until 2026. Visa and MasterCard agreed to cap credit card swipe fees in America, ending a two-decade battle with retailers and potentially saving merchants $30 billion over 5 years. The deal also allows retailers to charge customers for using the credit cards at tills while guiding them towards cheaper options. Free speech advocate. A judge threw out a lawsuit brought by X against the Center for Countering Digital Hate for allegedly conducting a campaign to drive advertisers away from the platform. CCDH published a report purporting to show a rise in hate speech on Twitter, as it was then known, which Mr. Elon Musk, its owner, described as scaremongering. But in a scathing decision, the judge found that the case had been all but punishing the defendants for their speech. After years of fighting his extradition from Britain and 10 months under house arrest, Mike Lynch went on trial in San Francisco over claims that he fraudulently misstated revenues at Autonomy, a software firm that he sold to Hewlett-Packard in 2011 for $10.3 billion. HP subsequently took a huge write-down on the value of its acquisition and alleged that Ms. Lynch, Autonomy's founder, had deceived the company. The prosecution says it is the biggest case of fraud in Silicon Valley's history. Mr. Lynch denies the charge. His defense counters that HP mismanaged Autonomy. A rocky road. Under pressure from activist investors, Unilever set out a restructuring plan that could see it shed 7,500 jobs, about 6% of its workforce. The consumer goods conglomerate is also spinning off its ice cream division, which includes the Magnum and Ben & Jerry's brands. Ice cream accounts for 16% of Unilever's sales, but prospects for the business's growth are melting. Apple reached a $490 million settlement over claims that it misled investors in 2018 about strong demand for the iPhone in China. In January 2019, the tech giant admitted that its business in China was struggling. The lead plaintiff in the investor's lawsuit is a pension fund for the English county of Norfolk. Apple denies wrongdoing. Intel is to receive $8.5 billion in government grants and up to $11 billion in public loans to build or expand factories in Arizona, Ohio, New Mexico, and Oregon, the biggest beneficiary yet of the Biden administration's program to boost chip making in the United States and ensure the country dominates the market for high-end chips. Intel is pledging to invest $100 billion in American chip manufacturing. The public money it receives will be tied to production benchmarks. Meanwhile, NVIDIA unveiled the Blackwell Graphics Processing Unit, its latest line of chips for use in artificial intelligence, which will greatly increase the computing power of large language models. Containing 208 billion transistors, the new chips could cost up to $40,000 each. May the Force be with you. George Lucas said he supported Disney and its chief executive Bob Iger in its fight against Nelson Peltz, an activist investor who is seeking 2 seats on the board in order to overhaul the business. Mr. Lucas, the creator of Star Wars, is one of Disney's biggest individual shareholders. His Lucasfilm production company has been a Disney subsidiary since 2012, and his endorsement is a big boost for the company. Mr. Peltz takes his proxy battle to the annual general meeting on April 3rd. The Biden administration unveiled sweeping new vehicle pollution rules, which it hopes will ensure that most new cars and light trucks sold in America are either pure electric or hybrid by 2032. The new standards require car makers to raise caps gradually on the amount of exhaust pipe pollution their vehicles emit, but it does not ban them. The regulations come amid a weakening demand for EVs in America and will probably be challenged all the way to the Supreme Court. Xiaomi, one of China's biggest makers of smartphones, published a solid set of quarterly earnings. The company is making a diversion into the EV market, delivering its first electric car on March 28th. Bentley Motors reported its second-best ever annual profit. The luxury car maker made lots of money from record levels of customers ordering bespoke vehicles. One customer reportedly wanted wood from his personal forest to furnish his car's interior. And moving on to the next article from this week's Economist, this one is titled Hotels, Posh Space. Luxury hotels are having a glorious moment. In Doncaster, a town in northern England, $100,000 will buy you a 4-bedroom house. In Dubai, it will get you a 4-bedroom penthouse for a night. The Royal Mansion, the nightly rate for which makes it the world's priciest suite, sits on the 18th and 19th floors of the Atlantis, the Royal Hotel. It comes with a 1,100 square meters, that's about 12,000 square feet, of marble floors, a terrace with an infinity pool, a steam room, Hermes shampoo, $500 bathrobes, a not-so-mini-bar, and naturally a butler. The Royal Mansion's opulence and price are hard to rival, but only a bit less posh properties are popping up from the Okavango Delta in Botswana to Kangaroo Island in southern Australia. Saudi Arabia is building eco-resorts on the Red Sea with a collective 8,000 rooms, which one executive calls the New Maldives. London's BT Tower is being converted into a high-end hotel. For well-heeled globetrotters, all these cannot come up fast enough. In contrast to mid-range hotels, luxury ones are in the midst of a boom. The precise definition of what counts of luxury varies. But you know it when you see it. Grand View Research, a firm of analysts, expects travellers to splurge $1.5 trillion on what it calls luxury trips this year, nearly back to pre-pandemic levels. By 2030, they may be pampering themselves to the tune of $2.3 trillion. A big slug of that will go on accommodation. The fancier, the better. The number of available luxury rooms could reach 1.9 million, up from 1.6 million last year, reckons CoStar, an analytics firm. Even so, hoteliers are having trouble keeping up with demand. One reason is that there are more big spenders, and they are getting richer. In 2012, the world had $29 million millionaires, according to UBS, a bank. By 2022, that figure more than doubled to nearly 60 million. The collective fortune of these silver-spooned individuals exceeded $200 trillion. Many more now hail from what are otherwise middle-income or even poor places. The number of millionaires in Brazil is forecast nearly to double by 2027 to almost 800,000. By 2028, India is expected to mint another 7,000 people with a net worth of $30 million or more, on top of the 13,000 it had last year. The filthy rich are not the only ones partaking in pricey peregrinations. The merely well-to-do are increasingly forking out more of their disposable income on exclusive experiences. Corporate road warriors are tacking a few days of leisure on top of business jaunts. Bosses are splurging on plush retreats as a way to boost esprit de corps in a hybridized workforce. In America, bookings of 10 or more luxury rooms rose by 9% in January, year on year. All these splendor seekers are competing for scarce rooms. Although construction of new hotels has resumed after a pandemic-induced pause, it is slow going, especially for fancy digs in select locations such as historic city centers and nature reserves. In many parts of the world, just acquiring the necessary approvals and permits can take between 5 and 7 years. And that is before any cement is poured. Atlantis the Royal took 14 years to build from start to finish. Some brands are explicitly constraining supply to create scarcity. Bulgari Hotels, a joint venture between the eponymous Italian jeweler and Marriott International, an American hotelier, will limit itself to 15 locations. This is turning luxury hotels into a lucrative asset class. The annual rate of return on such properties exceeded 6% in 2022, the highest in at least a decade. And that in turn is attracting investors beyond the usual hotel operators, property developers, and buyout barons. And that's all the time we have for today. You've been listening to another edition of The Economist. Until next time, I'm Maxine Clark signing off. Goodbye.